Mary, tell us about the involvement here with Breast Cancer Awareness. This is the month, isn't it?
This is. October every year has been the time that the whole landscape turns pink, and your friends call you up and say that they're going to run in the race for the cure, and would you please make a donation with them? And I say no. I do.
Why?
Because, you know, the whole pink ribbon thing draws our attention to awareness. That's it. Stops there. If anyone is not aware at this point in time that we've got an issue with breast cancer, perhaps they're living under a rock. I can't imagine who that would be. I think we need to shift to prevention, and we need to do it now because we have the cure. It's already here. In large part, we already know what causes a cancer to grow and how not to make it grow. In fact, there was an unusually candid report that came out this year from the President's Cancer Panel that said Americans are suffering grievous harm from the 80,000 or so chemicals in our daily environment. Many of these chemicals, most of them, have not been tested for safety, and we know that a good number of them are carcinogenic, meaning they cause cancer. So we know that if we can learn what is in our environment that has cancer-causing chemicals in it, if we can remove those, we can lessen our exposure.
Absolutely. And it's just, a lot of this is common sense, Mary, isn't it?
It is. You know, we all have cancer cells inside of us every single day.
Absolutely.
Our bodies
we're probably born that way.
Well, it's just the result of living in the real world. Your body makes maybe up to 10,000 errant cells a day. If your immune system is robust and on the job, it takes care of them and cleans them out. Not a problem. But when the immune system is weak, that's when the cancer cells can get hold. And what weakens the immune system? We don't give our genes the right food. Food is information. Food is medicine.
Right.
Also, we slam our immune system with the chemicals of living in the everyday world. And then we also slam our immune systems and our bodies with electromagnetic frequencies from television, radio, wireless communications, cell phones. All of that reverberates around us 24/7 with rhythms that are not what the body would say are natural rhythms.
And more of that is all around us.
There's more to come.
It's going to get worse.
There's more to come. Yeah.
You two talk about mammographies, and I want you to point that out. It's very important for women to understand this. Years ago, that's all they pushed. You got to get a mammography. You got to do this. Now they're saying, wait a minute, less might be better. What's going on?
Mammography, in fact, is ionizing radiation, and that is one of the only things that the American Cancer Society actually says causes cancer. And so here we are recommending that these women get their breasts mashed and irradiated every year. And in point of fact, we're irradiating them with something that increases their chances of cancer. There is a technique that's called thermography.
Now, what is that?
Thermography actually measures the heat signature that comes off of a body. And so it'll be a measure of inflammation. It's not an anatomic test. It's not going to tell you if you have a lump. Your fingers tell you if you have a lump. But it will measure inflammation, and it can detect inflammation years before mammography, for instance, will see calcification or a lump. So I personally think it's a far better technique.
You know, everyone will agree that early detection is key. And thermography, which can see the heat signature of a tumor forming maybe 10 years before mammography can actually pick up on the lump, is much better early screening. If I could be king for a day and change the world, I would say, okay, all of you pink ribbon groups out there, please, let's drop mammography as the preferred screening technique, and let's go to thermography. I know that everybody's invested in mammography machines. Mm-hmm. I know that Susan G. Komen, for example, has had the General Electric representatives on their board. But let's do what's right for women. Let's get a better screening technique, and let's not give them an annual dose of radiation and all the false positives that go with it, which is why they recommended less screening.
How often do our cells die and replenish themselves? Is it going through a process every, what, six weeks? How fast?
It all depends on the area of the body. The cells of the GI tract die and replenish themselves within a few days. the cells of the bone. It takes 7 or 8 years to turn over half of them.
So if you are able to keep, let's say, a diseased cell from replicating, but to come back as a stronger, fresh cell because of taking care of yourself, is that a way of curing cancer, for example?
It might be. To be able to restore these cells to health would be an absolute ideal result, rather than killing them off, rather than treating them as the enemy.
You know, I think you've got to an interesting point there, though. What causes a good cell to go bad?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stress of the food and the chemicals and the EMF.
Yeah, your environment, everything.
Yeah, on top of genetics that maybe make the cell susceptible.
I mean, do you think 4,000 years ago that human beings got cancer? And if they did, at what rate did they get it compared to today?
Dan, we can only look at what we know in terms of statistics that were sort of kept in the year 1900, and it was rare.
Yeah, but 4,000 years ago, I think people probably did occasionally get cancer. There are reports of, you know, unusual tumors, but not very often, not very frequently. Of course, people didn't live as long either, didn't really have the chance to develop tumors so much.
Why didn't they live long? You know, when you're looking at, you know, healthier food, no pollution, why didn't they live?
You
know,
remember,
I'm not talking about the biblical days now. You know, not like Methuselah in his 900 years, but generally, why didn't they live long?
Right. And infants died of diarrhea and infectious diseases. They didn't necessarily have always the most fantastic diet. I suspect it was very similar to the way it is now. You know, there are haves and have-nots. And the ones that had not probably died out a lot sooner.
If you two could at least begin to educate Americans and Canadians and people worldwide listening to this show about alternative medicine, let's start with you, Martha. What would you tell them? What direction would you like to see people go?
I would tell them that the first thing that they really need to do if they really want to be alternative is to look at what they're putting into their bodies and make sure that it's really clean. And the second thing that they need to do is to look at what they are being advised to do by the establishment and make up their own minds whether it makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. And how about you, Mary?
I'd say take a look at what we have been told. The conventional wisdom, for example, is we're going to fight breast cancer. We're going to fight whatever disease has fallen upon us. I'd say let's take a look at what the body's trying to tell us, because that's how it communicates. And if you fight lung cancer, for example, you don't win. If you educate people that drawing all of that smoke and all of those chemicals in cigarettes into your lungs causes lung cancer, and if you stop doing that, we'll have less lung cancer, it worked. That's the power of prevention.